Hey, welcome to Objection, the worldwide leader in contrarian a-holery. I am Judge David Johnson and joined by fellow a-hole Dan Mancini.
Greetings.
And Dan, I'm going to hand it right off to you because this was your idea this episode, and if this doesn't drive people to drink, I don't know what will. So why don't you take the reins?
Yeah, this is contrarian a-holery to the extreme, I think.
It's so contrarian that it's pitted us against each other.
Yeah, exactly. I have one little follow-up from last week's show, though, before we launch into this week's show.
Yes.
That is, I learned via private message on Facebook from an old high school buddy that our gym teacher, I had him for three years out of my 4 years in high school, is Rudy's brother.
Really?
Yeah. Mick Rudiger. He was the wrestling coach at my high school.
Wow.
I was like, wow, I can't believe all this time. This is the first I've heard this. And it makes sense because, you know, the dude's about 5'5", 5'6".
Yeah.
You know, but athletic, you know, looks like a wrestler. we all couldn't stand him in high school. Probably, you know, he's a decent guy. But and from his perspective, he's probably a lot lighter in terms of discipline on us than the nuns were on him when he was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, we viewed him as like just the side of a Nazi. He's the kind of guy who, you know, always made us do push-ups and laps and stuff for fooling around and, you know, didn't cotton to our antics at all during high school.
So I guess his famous brother never dropped by at all to visit, huh?
No, and he wasn't, you know.
He wouldn't have been that famous, though, right?
Yeah, at the time, I mean, that was part of it. It was like, how did I not know that? Then I realized that the movie came out, you know, after I was out of high school. So there wasn't really any reason at that point
right, to
know who his brother was.
Right.
But still, it's an odd.
It is. That's a nice connection. I like that. There you go.
Yeah, you know. So another reason that my life could be in danger after last week's show.
Well, I think you're okay. I think the OWMC has dispatched agents to run 24-hour protection on you. So,
right, exactly. and it was funny because the message that I got was pretty – there was still a lot of hostility towards Coach Rudiger from high school days. And it was like, you know, come on, man, let it go.
It's like the coach from the Seinfeld, the guy with the baked teeth, whatever.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, you know, come on, we were jerks. So he probably wasn't as bad as we remember.
Right.
Because it wasn't like, you know, we were innocent parties in the whole thing. You know, we pretty much made a mockery out of gym class. So I'm sure we deserved at least as much as he gave us and probably more.
Yes. Those are truths that I've come around to these days as well.
Yeah. Yeah. But this week, getting to this week's show, which is, like we said, is taking contrarian a-holery to a new height, so much so that we can't even agree on the dissenting opinions. And that's sort of the theme of the show, is movies that each of us will defend a movie that the other one cannot in good conscience defend.
And probably the world at large as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For mine, definitely. I think I'm probably the only human being on the face of the planet who would defend this movie. And I have to say, I'm not even sure that I'm defending the movie so much as the director, sort of.
But wow.
We'll get into that.
Yes, we will. Well, you want me to start it off then, I guess?
Sure.
You want to try to do that? So I guess we'll just wing this here. We each have a movie that is pretty much indefensible, and we'll try to scrape together a meager defense of it, but, you know, we'll see. I mean, I will go out the gate saying that my movie isn't objectively good. I'm just going to try to defend why I enjoyed it in a moderate fashion, which is a lot more than most people would admit to. So, but my movie is, in fact, this was one of the original objection topics I had floated by you, and you're like, eh. Yeah, I don't think so. I'm not, you know, I don't know if I could in good conscience defend it. And then we try to bring in Mike Rubino, who I thought kind of liked this movie. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm not so sure either. So even like the people I thought liked it, when they really think critically about it, are just revulsed.
Yeah, because I can remember I was sort of like, well, you know, I could like host the show.
Yeah, I'll moderate
the discussion and stuff and just kind of hang back. But yeah, I can't go for actually defending it.
Yes, and it's actually especially relevant now because the first trailer for the sequel to this movie came out, and we're going to be in the grips of that marketing. And the movie I will defend is, of course, Transformers: Revenge of the Fallen, and the third movie will be coming out in July. So yes, a movie widely disparaged, detested, crucified, pooped upon, just all those, anything a hack movie reviewer could come up with as far as saying how much he hates a movie was aimed at this, so.
Yes, yeah.
So I don't know, should I go about my meager defense first, or do you want to open up a can of whoop-ass on it? What do you want to do?
Let's go with your defense first.
All right, well, okay. It's pretty simple. Again, I am not going to say it's a good movie. It's probably 45 to 50 minutes too long, and you can lose that 45 minutes and still cut another 45 minutes out of it, probably. So this movie runs about 2 hours and 20 minutes. It should be like an 80-minute movie. There's so much wrong with it, obviously, and again, I know I'm copping out a little bit, but I will get into my defense, I promise. But there's so much wrong with it, like, essentially they were... You know, watching the behind-the-scenes features for the Blu-ray, it was really revealing. I mean, they were rendering animation hours before the world premiere. So they were still in the lab rendering frames of, animation. They had no script going on. They were filming while the writers were in the hotel room writing a script. So it was just...
Well, I remember even when it was announced, it was like, already?
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, I mean,
it was in the teeth of the writer's strike, but I'm not going to even use that as an excuse because it was just a cluster F of epic proportions. But there's so much stuff that it's just like, why is this here? Like the whole stuff with Sam. I mean, the basic plot of Sam opting to go to stupid college instead of like sticking around home, where he can maybe take some, University of Phoenix Online, or hit up Vry, or do the community college, because he's got a space robot that turns into like a Camaro, and he's dating Megan Fox, but that's not enough to keep him. So he ends up going to college, and that unfortunately gives us like a 20-minute, parents running amok in college on marijuana sequence, which is just brutal. And then you've got the shape-shifting Transformer who turns into like a beautiful girl.
That was baffling.
Baffling because I've always thought if Transformers are the technology to turn into beautiful human women, why are they bothering turning into dump trucks?
Right.
Why mess?
They could easily conquer the world.
That's right. Go seduce the president, get the nuclear codes and your money. Why turn into a dump truck? But anyway, so awful. John Turturro stuff. Awful. So many, robot heaven, awful.
Yeah.
The stupid twins, terrible, terrible. But, okay, so I will grant that. I will cede all of that, absolutely. However, I was still able to squeeze some enjoyment out of it for a few simple reasons. One was, like most people in my age bracket, I grew up with the Transformers. Grew up with Peter Cullen as the voice of my internal hero monologues.
All right.
So when I'd be walking to and fro from school pretending to be some kind of hero, it was always Peter Cullen's voice that was guiding me on my, my adventures. So automatically, Peter Cullen voicing Optimus Prime grants some coolness points for me. I thought that as bombastic as the action scenes were, there was a lot of stuff that I enjoyed. Like I liked the fight scene in the woods, like the 2-on-1 fight scene with Optimus Prime. I like that stuff. Even the opening I kind of liked. In fact, I would have loved that if that was a movie. The whole movie of the Special Forces group teaming up with Autobots and seeking out Decepticons and hunting them down. That would have been great if that was a whole movie. But anyway, I was on board with that. So, again, things got a little too nutty at the end, just too much sensory overload, but, there was some cool stuff, and the explosions were obviously huge. The plot, again, I understand, incoherent, but my argument is it's not much different than a Transformers cartoon plot that I remember.
Oh, yeah.
Felt like an actual plot from the Transformers cartoon, with plot devices and you know, super sinister mega villains living in Saturn or something and coming down, you know, with secret weapons, and you know, and then Optimus Prime getting a giant jetpack and flying around and just dominating, you know. So in that way, it felt very much, like the cartoon. I mean, it does shoot itself in the foot because it's too raunchy almost.
Yeah.
And so it's like, if they toned that down, kind of toned down that sophomore crap, it would have been a lot more palatable because it would have felt like an authentic cartoon, you know. So that was kind of
it would have felt more like a merging of the cartoon with that kind of Spielberg, Lucas action adventure movie of the 80s.
Right.
If the
raunch
had been toned down.
Right. But they just went for the cheap gags, and you know, so that was pretty hard to stomach. As with this and the first Transformers movies, I love that, you know, it was the army is obvious. They're constant love letters to military techno might, you know, which is always cool. So there's no like, it's probably OWMC approved if you think about it, because the army guys, they're not douchebags. They're not like working with the Decepticons. They just show up and blow things up, and they love doing it, and they're heroic, and that's great. You know,
So there is an old white man cabal in the movie, but it is saving the planet. So it would definitely be
WMC approved. WMC, yes. I was actually shocked that it's probably the only movie ever made so far that took a veiled shot at the Obama administration, which I was not. I don't think anyone has anything to worry about. If the best you can come up with is Transformers Revenge of the Fallen being
good. Yeah.
But still. But anyway, so I guess to bullet list it, pro-military, so no cheap shots at the military. Optimus Prime is in it, kicks a lot of ass. Peter Cullen gives a voice. The action, 60 to 70% of the action is enjoyable. And the plot, no real problems because it felt like a Transformers cartoon plot. And Starscream continues to be a dick, very much like I remember him in the TV show. But is it perfect? Obviously not. Is it adequate? Nah, but I think it's such a huge sensory overload, nightmare, arguably. But I didn't really treat my soul as a urinal cake like it seemed to so many others.
Yeah.
So that is, there you go. That is my meager defense. And you feel free now to open up.
Well played. Well, I think you covered most of the ground of why I don't care for it. That is like most, and I'll go on record now saying I am not a knee-jerk Michael Bay basher like so many people.
Oh, right. Yeah, me.
Interwebs are.
Right.
I think he does what he does, and I don't think he's under any illusions that he's making high art. He is an egocentric bastard for sure, and he's definitely self-indulgent. I mean, my problem with Bay's films is I'm always incredibly frustrated by the fact that they run 2 hours and 20 minutes long.
Right.
He makes 90-minute movies that run almost 2.5 hours long, and it's just pure self-indulgence.
And he does he always managed to do like stuff that's just he goes all over the line just a little bit too much. Like for example, he decided to put flames on Optimus Prime, you know, which I think is kind of lame, but he thinks it's cool, you know. And then I remember they asked him about it, and they said, oh, they wanted kind of make it look like he had ribs when he turns into the Transformer or something like that. So why not just make it stripes? No, it's got to be flames because flames are cool. So that's irritating.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, and the thing is, the movie, like you said, it just does not support 2 hours and 20 minutes because the human parts of it are just entirely unnecessary.
Right, and I will say I'm not a knee-jerk Shia LaBeouf basher either.
No, neither am I. I actually did not have a problem with him in the Indiana Jones movie.
I think he was just a victim of...
not a great...
Poor circumstances, perhaps.
Yeah, and I don't hate that movie as much as most people do, or even at all, but that's a whole different show. But I certainly, I don't find him in that movie any more irritating than Short Round. I mean, you know, he's a sidekick.
Yes.
And I think he actually can act. It almost becomes self-parody in the Transformer movies with his kind of neurotic delivery and all
right.
the no, and all that stuff. That
yeah, that's right. that's right.
It's ridiculous. But
so again, yeah, annoying teen 20-somethings in the cartoon as well, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, Transformers, the pot scene is...
Oh, yeah, awful.
It's awful. The whole fact, I mean, the whole college thing, I think you're dead on, because there's all this setup for him going to college, and then he's in exactly one lecture, and that's the extent of his college career, and then it's over. You know,
but again, like, why go? Who cares?
Right.
No point. There's
why
no,
even do that?
Like, what degree are you going to achieve that leads to what career that's going to be more rewarding than driving a brand new, like a prototype Camaro that no one even has yet, that turns into an alien robot with a laser arm, and you're dating Megan Fox, who like strips down her underwear right outside of your garage, you know? You're going to eclipse that by getting a degree in civil engineering? You tell that what you're telling me?
No. Totoro's awful.
Oh, yeah.
What was the other thing?
The geriatric jet is pretty awful, too.
Yeah. Oh, and I will say this. Most of the time, you know, when I hear reports of, oh, there's racist imagery in this movie, I'm always kind of skeptical about, we'll see. Is it really that bad, or is it, you know, people are just kicking up a fuss because they like to hear themselves complain? You know, what's the deal? And then when I saw it, it was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm in agreement this time for sure.
I'm actually gonna
crossing a line.
I agree, and I'm just gonna I'll probably chalk that up to just Bay and people just being utterly oblivious. So I don't know how it could be. You think even like an animator's assistant would have spoken up and said this is a little off. So, but even setting aside that, I don't care if they were the most politically correct creations. They were brutally annoying too. You know, and they stole like they were dominating airtime when like cooler. You know, where's like Mirage or something? You know, cool. Transformer, not these made-up douchebags.
Yeah, I mean, really, there should be no way to make a movie that involves giant robots wailing on each other and destroying large swaths of a city and have me dislike it.
Right.
But Bay manages to do, like, everything that would trigger my dislike. Having too long, having human characters that are just totally uninteresting, and bad dialogue, and really annoying humor, and, you know, right down the line.
And actually, I will say, though, this joke has gotten a lot... For some reason, I knew this joke was coming, and it still made me laugh. And for some reason, I didn't think it was as awful and putrid as people thought it was. But the whole... When John Turturro say he's underneath, like, the testicles or whatever of the...
Yeah.
I actually kind of thought that was funny. So that's just... I mean, that's more of a statement on me than the writing, you know? So take that for what it's worth.
Hey, you know, there's nothing wrong with that kind of humor. But, the raunch factor was the other thing you mentioned, and that is, you know, watching it, that was extra aggravating to me because the whole time I'm watching it, I'm thinking, I don't like this. But I was also thinking, man, my son would love this movie. Too bad.
Right.
There's so much crap in it that.
That's right.
That is just completely inappropriate.
Yeah. It's totally mismatched.
Stuff,
yeah.
You've got a whole nother audience that you can reach with that movie.
Let me ask you this:
love it and wouldn't care about the people. You know, the poor acting and the poor writing, and you know, would just get into the robots and everything and dig it.
Now, what did you think of the first Transformers?
I liked it better than the second one. But again, I thought it was overlong. The Transformers was, as a cartoon, was on, I think I was already in high school when that came out. So I'd never really watched it at all. As a matter of fact, when I saw the movie, I'd never seen the Transformers cartoon. And so I came away from the movie like, well, that was incredibly stupid. And then, I got a DVD of some of the cartoons for my son, and like after watching a couple episodes of that, it was like, oh well, you know, actually, it was a pretty accurate, like you said, the plot of the movie was pretty similar to the kind of nonsense that you'd see in the cartoon. So,
right.
To me, it was like, oh, well, it wasn't Bay being stupid. It was actually a pretty faithful rendition of the cartoon. Because seeing it as the movie for the first time and not really being familiar with that world at all, I was just sort of like, what is the... So they're big, like, robot things that turn into... And they're from outer space, and, you know, it was like... sort of like that experience that I will have when I'm watching anime, where it's like, okay, the Japanese are just batshit crazy. You know, because you get confronted with some plot where it's like, okay, there's schoolgirls, there's giant robots.
Tentacles.
There's alien creatures. Yeah, there's tentacles. There's, you know... samurai dudes, you know, this is just craziness, and the plot is always more convoluted and insane than it
yes.
seems like it needs to be.
And it's boring. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So I wasn't thrilled with it, but I don't know, it seemed more coherent and less, it actually seemed leaner than the second one, which is frightening. Cause
it was, yeah, I know, you're right. And I don't think it was nearly as raunchy and inappropriate, too.
I think
that's something you and the kids, you know, the kids can see and enjoy.
Yeah. I may have to pick that one up on Blu-ray just to, you know, have the kid watch it.
All right. Well, I think we spent enough time on this. Why don't you go in?
Yeah. And I'm.
You've had your fun. Now go ahead.
Yeah. I'm really treading into the defense of the absolutely indefensible. But my lone man, lone gunman. Choice to defend is Batman and Robin, directed by Joel Schumacher. One of the most reviled movies I think ever made, I would say.
Yet it is watchable, like it's 10 car pile up on the interstate watchable, I will say. But continue.
Yeah. And like I said, this may be less a defense of the movie than it is of Joel Schumacher. And there'll be a lot of qualifications as there were in your defense of Revenge of the Fallen. But, you know, again, it's a movie, I reviewed the Blu-ray anthology of all four of the Batman movies made in the 80s and 90s, the Burton and Schumacher ones. And I had not seen Batman and Robin since I saw it in the theater, and that was an incredibly painful experience seeing it in the theater. But I will say this, of the four movies, it's really the only one that is entirely appropriate for kids. And it really is geared towards kids. And so, unfortunately for me, I guess, my son just loved that movie. And he's watched it probably 10 times since I reviewed that, which is, you know, a year and a half ago, I think I reviewed it. So I've had plenty of exposure to it. And what I've realized is, you know, as much as Schumacher gets bashed for destroying the franchise and stuff, which, you know, is legitimately that movie did tank that entire franchise. I think he was making the Batman movie that was natural for him to make. And it's, you know, he's of an era. And I think he talks about this in the Blu-ray extras, where, you know, I think he was a kid like in the 50s and 60s, I would say. And that's what Batman was in the 50s and 60s. He was like the guy in the, you know, in the Adam West TV show, just incredibly cheesy, campy, you know, and, you know, I think that's what Batman is to that generation of people.
Now, I saw an interview with him when I reviewed the special edition DVD, and it seemed like he was deflecting it towards what he was directed to do, kind of, by the producer.
Yeah, I mean...
Intimated that, yeah, he could have made something grittier if that was the direction he was being pushed in. So,
yeah, he definitely said that there was a lot of studio interference in terms of making sure that the movie was in line with the toys that they wanted to sell and stuff like that. But, you know, he's also said that he never seriously considered making a movie, any Batman movies without Robin, because to him, they're inseparable. If you're going to have Batman, you have Robin. That's the way it is. And that's very much a 50s, 60s kind of dynamic from the comic book. And having grown up in the 70s and 80s, and being the same age as Christopher Nolan, when he made his movies, those are the ones that I got, because mm-hmm. that was, you know, he as much as Frank Miller influenced it a little bit, Frank Miller stuff from the 80s and early 90s and Jeff Loeb's Long Halloween and stuff, really the basis of his version of it is those Neil Adams, Dennis O'Neill comics of the 70s, which is what I read as a kid. And so when I saw Batman Begins, it was like that, for the first time ever, that's the Batman I remember when I was a kid, other than the TV one. So I do think that there is a fidelity, you know, I mean, Batman and Robin is treated like it's this abomination and it has no connection to the comic book Batman and all this stuff. But I think there is a fidelity to that era that Schumacher would have read as a kid. I will say this though. I don't think it is as good an adaptation of that era as the Adam West TV show. Because of the fact that there's too much self-aware nonsense. You know, you have the stupid, like, remember how he pulls out the
that Forever Credit Card
Express. Yeah.
See, now here's, so I am
back to stuff and driving through the McDonald's, you know, making references to driving through the drive through in the Batmobile and stuff like that.
I'm generally
in the old TV show. In the old TV show, it was like Adam West and Burt Ward and pretty much the entire cast, as campy as it was, they played everything straight.
Right.
Like,
well, I'm generally impressed by it. I think you make a compelling argument, though. I would just counter by saying, I will grant you all that, but just taking within the confines of a movie going experience,
yeah,
it is a colonoscopy gone horribly wrong. Colonoscopy with a garden rake, I think. But I take your argument. I think that is a solid argument. But you know, as I start thinking of Batman and Robin, and you bring out the credit card, just the litany begins to roll over of all. Like the thing about Batman and Robin is nothing makes sense in any kind of world you think it. You know, whatever world you apply to it, nothing makes sense within that world. You know.
Yeah, the plot is incomprehensible.
I mean, I'm talking about like physics. You know, physics don't make sense. Like Mr. Freeze swinging up, you know, even though he probably weighs 2,000 pounds, he starts swinging on vines. Or Robin being frozen solid and thawed out in a cauldron of water with a bat laser. You would think you'd have to be a little precise, right? But it's pretty easy. Or forget Robin. How about the entirety of Gotham City thought out with a couple of sweeps of the sunbeam, you know, exactly tuned, exactly right. There's a rubber lips gag, which is fantastic. There's a surfing, you know, when they're at they sky surf after they blow up that bomb.
That's horrendous.
Oh, and then Robin says cowabunga, which is awful to me. Awful. Unforgivable.
The whole Alfred thing is a bizarre subplot. And, you know, of course, they changed Batgirl's origin. So she's Alfred's niece.
Oh, Batgirl.
Somehow he whips up this costume. And, you know, like a virtual Alfred does. It makes no sense whatsoever.
Teaches her everything. Batman doesn't even seem to have much of a problem with his chubby little new friend showing up to fight crime. You know?
And then she gives the, you know, Uma Thurman the feminist speech thing, and you know, oh man, it's just painfully bad. And Uma Thurman is awful in that movie. I mean, just unbearably awful.
Like anti-sexy, I would say.
Yeah. And it's like she's working on her Rosalind Russell impersonation or something, but just working on it. Like it's unformed. And
I mean, bat skates, you know, the bat figure skating. I love in the Schumacher movies how, like, the villains obviously spend so much. I mean, for the money that Mr. Freeze could have saved by not, like, decorating his hideout with neon lights and stuff, you know, and actually went to buy some diamonds, he would have been able to, you know, fuel his suit without having to do any robberies. So, like, all the villains always have just neon stuff happening, or like spotlights circulating their logos around their headquarters.
And how is diamond fuel? I mean, how does it?
I don't know. Yeah, again,
how does it get consumed? It does. And it's, you know,
No rules.
It's energy. I don't. Yeah.
In whatever plane of existence, there are no rules applied. No rules make sense that you apply to this. None.
No. Yeah. So I mean, it's. I will not defend it as a movie that's watchable because it is insufferable to watch, and I know this because, like I said, I've seen it like 10 times.
But again, though, I do say, see, I will actually be contrary and a-hole with you here, Dan, because it to me it's hugely watchable because it's such a it's either the apex or the nadir of just, you know, am I pronouncing that right? Nadir or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Of terrible, you know, brutally just like filmmaking of the id gone completely loose. Like no restraint filmmaking. Just
yeah, it's bad taste. Everything, on like a yes. John Waters level.
Yes. You know? Kitsch going over the top. Anything like just everything. I mean, we were picking on, you know, Revenge of the Fallen, obviously, with Bay doing, you know, flames on Optimus Prime. But every frame of this movie is pumped up so that, I mean, just there's always something to nuke your brain with in every frame of it, every frame. So.
Yeah, it is crazy. And I will say this, probably my favorite moment in the movie, though, is the scene where Freeze is in prison and his prison guard is Jesse the Body Ventura. And so you have that moment where where Schwarzenegger and Ventura can kind of talk smack with each other. I can't remember exactly what, you know, I think that might be where Schwarzenegger says, you know, that's the sound of your own doom. Or,
oh, probably.
I can't remember. He whips off some good one-liners there.
And the other, I mean, and I think
good dad.
I think George Clooney as Batman is just disgraceful. I mean, he's just George Clooney as George Clooney. You know, like his Batman sounds like his Bruce Wayne, which sounds like George Clooney. You know,
yeah.
So, and then Batman,
it's like the laziest performance of his career.
It is, and he's
like
such
he's
a
just showing up and collecting a paycheck.
I mean, he's such a weenie too, because you remember he lets Mr. Freeze hang out in a comfy jail cell working on the cure for his wife, you know. And this is after he legitimately tried to mass murder the entirety of the Gotham City twice.
Yeah.
You know, once with the bomb in the beginning, and second by freezing everyone to death. Right. If I were a taxpayer, I might have a real problem with Batman.
Yeah, and the other really grating thing is the gossip columnist lady.
Remember
her? Yeah. So he's asking questions and has really bad line delivery, and it's Bob Kane's widow, I believe,
who
plays it. So that's why she's it's not like they hired a professional actress. So her line reads are just awful, and oh man, it's so bad.
I mean,
so bad.
And like every frame Alicia Silverstone in is, you know, dire. That is true. I mean, there's nothing is salvageable in there. I mean, at all. I mean, does she wear heels as Batgirl?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That's one stylist I could take because it's probably brutally uncomfortable for her to run around in heels. So you know, I will take that. So.
Yeah, it's and you know my 5-year-old loves it.
Yeah.
Loves it.
I could see that. I could see that. And I don't think there's anything terribly offensive in there.
No.
Like, you know, like parents' counsel offensive, so.
No, yeah. Like, you know, Burton's movies are.
The veiled, you know. Right.
Especially Batman Returns. I mean, that's way too.
It's nightmarish, Batman Returns. Yeah, I mean, at least.
But, forever there's some dialogue issues in that one.
Yeah, and there's probably, that's true. And there's some thematic stuff with Nicole Kidman. But,
Batman and Robin is just straight up aimed at kids.
Yes. That is one point it definitely has over Revenge of the Fallen. The very least, you know, you can park your kid in front of it. So,
yeah.
Well, you know, after the spirited debate, I would say that we tried our best, but both movies are unsalvageable, I think.
Yeah. I mean,
now that I think about it critically, I don't think, I think we probably made the very best argument you could make on behalf of these movies. And we spent most of the time, like, just taking a dump on them. So,
yeah, I mean, we're not saying they're good movies. What we are saying is that no childhoods have been raped in the making or viewing of
that's
movies.
That's true. I agree.
So,
with,
you know, give up that kind of hyperbole.
I agree with
let
that.
Let it go.
Good.
You know,
that's good. I like that.
Cut Schumacher and Bay a break. I mean, they're, you know.
Yeah,
they're not the greatest filmmakers ever, but, you know, give them a break. They're not, you know, they don't deserve the the reviling that they get.
Right. I mean, Schumacher is not this flamboyant, cartoony director. I mean, I think the guy directed 8mm, right? The Nicolas Cage movie? Yeah. Which is like the darkest crap that ever got released in the mainstream film. So, yeah.
And
so,
it did be Lost Boys.
So. Lost Boys, of course. He'll always get a pass for me for Lost Boys.
Yeah. I mean, even with... I mean, look, he made me enjoy a movie that involves a scene, or that includes a scene of Corey Haim singing in the bathtub. Still, I like the movie. I mean, he was able to do that. Not many directors could do that.
And or Corey Haim walking around the Santa Monica Pier wearing a bathrobe.
Yeah.
And
or that was a shirtless, muscled, greased up dude playing the saxophone with a gigantic mullet.
It was fantastic, yes.
I mean, you know, who in the 80s would have guessed that Joel Schumacher was gay?
That's right.
Based on the content of Lost Boys.
I believe.
You never know.
Didn't Corey Haim have a George Michael, like a topless George Michael poster in his bedroom, too? I'm pretty sure he did.
It was either George Michael or it might have been Rob Lowe. Should be even worse, I think.
Oh, man.
It was one of the two, yeah. And it was weird. You know? I was like, wow, you know, why?
It wasn't a...
I was a kid, you know, I was in like high school, middle school age when that movie came out, and that's not, you know, like people had like...
What about Banana Rap? Weren't they available?
Posters and stuff like that, you know, like supermodels and Christie Brinkley and stuff, you know, not Rob Lowe. That's a little odd.
Oh, man. All right, well, I think that's it for this edition, Dan. I think this is too much country in a hole even for me to bear. But you did preview perhaps an upcoming episode one of these days. Speaking of cutting the crap with the "You Ruined My Childhood" stuff, and we've touched on that. We've talked about, you know, the Star Wars prequels and whatnot. But maybe the fourth Indiana Jones movie might need to cross our desks one of these days.
Yeah, you know, I could definitely defend that one.
All right, so stay tuned.
Although I will say that my defense of it involves kind of trashing everything but Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Well, my defense of it rests solely on the fact that the Soviets are bad guys. That's it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. But I still love, you know, I mean, again, it'll be a topic for another show, but I'll just say that, you know, it's sort of like seeing Sean Connery play James Bond. I just, you know, it could be a terrible movie, but like Live and Let Die, or not Live and Let Die, You Only Live Twice is a terrible Bond movie. But it's still Connery playing Bond, you know? If it's Harrison Ford playing Indiana Jones.
Gets you a lot of slack.
Man, I am there. That's all there is to it.
All right, well, there's a hot tease there for us. So, I don't know. I guess with that, Dan, what's left to say?
Let's see. I guess just thanks, 10 points easy.